Hi everyone, welcome back to Tuesday Talks. Thank you for joining us today. So with us today we have Dr. Fadi, who is going to talk to us about the Tourette's disorder. To start off, we can have Dr. Fadi introduce himself.
Thank you so much, Latifa. My name is Fadi. I'm a clinical psychologist at Jalila Children's Hospital. And we are launching what we believe to be the first program for Tic and Tourette's in the Emirates here. And we're very excited about it. So really excited to join you guys today to speak a little bit about that.
Very nice. So, to remind you all, the title of the topic today is I Won't Hide, the Impact of Tourette Disorder. So, to start off, Dr. Fadi, why don't you tell us a little bit about what the disorder is or about what tics are?
Sure, of course. So what we know tics to be, that they're very simply the repetitive movements that are involuntary for the person. And they start pretty early on in childhood, at least in most cases. So we think they can start as early as 3 or 4 years old, but normally we'll see them around 5 years old. And if you could imagine a five-year-old, they're sitting there and they're starting to have these involuntary movements, which might look like exaggerated blinking. So like your five-year-old is sitting there and all of a sudden they start, really, really blinking very hard. And you must think, well, something is wrong with their eye. Maybe it's dryness, maybe it's weather related, but this is what a lot of parents end up seeing. And some other children end up developing what we call vocal tics. So there's motor tics, which involve muscles, and then there's vocal tics, which involve sounds. So something like sniffling, something as simple as so like sniffling, it could get more complicated though. It could get into like whistling, it could get into really heavy grunt noises or throat clearing. And then when it gets more and more complicated, it could actually be full phrases. Now, those are tics. So someone could only have motor tics. So someone could have just these movements. And then other people can only have sounds. And they're both tics in their own right. Now, when both of them come together, though, when someone has motor tics and vocal tics, that's when we say that person has Tourette disorder. That's the recent title. Previously, it was known as Tourette syndrome, which it still kind of is, but the most official, latest title is Tourette disorder. And I think one of the questions most parents will ask as soon as they come to the clinic is, what happened? What caused something like this? What did I do wrong as a mom? What did I do wrong as a dad for my son or daughter to develop tics? And the answer is nothing. We know that tics are neurological, meaning they're based in the brain, but they're also affected by the environment. So, an easy way to kind of remember it is if you think of someone who's asthmatic, someone who has asthma. We know that there's definitely a genetic component to it, but asthma is heavily affected by its environment. So same thing with tics or Tourette disorder. We know that it's heavily affected by its environment, but it's also very much genetic and neurologically based. So this is why we also see it in a lot of kids that are growing up. So we say it's a neurodevelopmental disorder, meaning it comes from the brain and it comes in a certain period of development, like we said, between that 5 to 7 years old period. So that's kind of a brief background, but I'm happy to answer any questions if I'm sure I could clarify some things.
Since we just mentioned questions, to those who are here on Zoom or watching us on Instagram Live, We'd be happy to answer your questions. You can write them down. It could be during the conversation or towards the end. But I actually have a question. I don't know anything about this. I'm very curious. What are the environmental factors that, you know, I don't want to say help, but I don't know, like, what's the word that develops the Tourette's disorder for these? I think you get my question. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do. No, it's a great question. So there isn't necessarily a specific environment that will cause it to happen. We know that more stressful environments are more likely to develop anxiety disorders in general. And sometimes tics could be kind of pushed along by some like stressor, like someone moving to a new school, schools starting. That's a trigger we see sometimes is someone is starting a new school. And they'll start developing tics like around July or August when they're getting ready to enter school. So it's a stressful mindset that sometimes can develop tics, but at other points it could actually be nothing. We can't find anything that was really a trigger for the onset of the tics or the Tourette disorder. Now, for most people though, we can't pinpoint something, but we might be able to see that they were more susceptible to some sort of anxiety, meaning that they tended to be a little bit more scared. They tended to be a little bit more jumpy. Now, of course, those are not necessarily clinical terms that someone is jumpy, but you kind of see a pattern over time. And some of those kids that tend to be more anxious are more likely to develop a tic or Tourette disorder. The other thing that we often see it in, if I'm talking about anxiety, is children that have OCD. And OCD is also a neurodevelopmental disorder. The obsessive compulsive disorder can develop very early on in childhood. Again, there are kids as young as 5 years old, sometimes even before 5 years old, that we can diagnose with OCD. Those kids are at a higher likelihood for developing Tourette disorder. And likewise, kids, and a lot of people don't actually know this, but a lot of kids that have ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, are a significantly higher risk for developing tics. Now, and the interesting thing is all of those things are neurodevelopmental disorders. And likewise with autism. Now, autism is a bit, I'm going to kind of put it off on the side because it tends to make things a little bit harder or scares people a little bit more when we say tics happen along with autism. Now, they do, but we don't like to say, like, even though there's a higher overlap between them, I think people tend to get a little bit more scared when we bring up the topic of autism. But the general idea is that it's a very neurodevelopmental disorder, just like ADHD is, just like OCD is, just like autism is. These are things that begin in childhood and can get worse with stressful environmental triggers. So if there's a lot of stress in the home, if there is unexpected events. So, I mean, when you think of the corona pandemic, that's something that we could easily say for a lot of kids, that was a trigger. You know, staying home for a significant amount of time, that's a trigger. Being removed from schools all of a sudden, that's a trigger. You know, being told that they must be careful at every turn or else they can, you know, hurt mom, hurt dad, hurt grandma, grandpa. You know, it can be very scary for a child to hear things like that. Now, of course, it's necessary. But if we're thinking about it from a child's perspective, you know, this is a very, very triggering time, you know, with all the changes that are going on from week to week. Yeah. Bless you.
Thank you. So is it treatable? Were there cases where it was like fully treated and never, you know, showed again?
Yeah. So we don't usually, so tics are managed. We say we manage them. We don't say we cure them. So there are a couple of methods to approach tics. The easy one to talk about first would be the medical side, which is giving medication. So the most common ones are usually antipsychotics, and they're very good at helping reduce the tics. The only bad side of it is that we can have side effects with some of those medications. And luckily, in the last about 25 years or so, we've developed really, really good behavioral interventions that in some cases can make the tics completely go away. But again, even in those cases, we don't say we cured the tics, we say we were managing them. Because what happens with tics is they tend to disappear and then reappear. You know, the technical term they tend to use is they wax and wane, meaning they tend to all of a sudden disappear or lessen, and then all of a sudden they might reappear or increase. And that makes a lot of people confused. You know, we thought we had this under control, we had it under our thumb. What's going on that it's appearing again? And sometimes the answer is nothing. And sometimes the answer is it's an environmental stressor. So we always try to stay away from saying that it's curable, but we definitely say that it's highly manageable. So the behavioral treatment that is used and that we offer at Jalila is called Comprehensive Behavioral Intervention for Tics. And we say CBIT to keep it short. And CBIT is a comprehensive treatment that helps, first of all, children and the families understand what tics are. Because when you know what they are, you can manage them much better because you don't have to be worried, you don't have to be scared. They're not dangerous. They're not something that mean someone is gonna have a seizure just because they're neurological. That doesn't mean any of those things at all. So we provide a lot of psychoeducation really early on to all the families. And then we start showing the kids what to do when they have tics, how to be aware of them. So before any tic happens, there's something called a premonitory urge. A premonitory urge is basically the feeling that you get before doing the action. So if you think of a sneeze, you get that feeling right before you sneeze. That's a premonitory urge. Now, tics are very much the same, except for the more you do the tic, the more that feeling tends to come back, unlike a sneeze. So it has a negative reinforcement cycle. The more I do the tic, the more the tic is more likely to want to happen again, right? It's kind of this cycle that puts all of our kids in. But once you become aware of what that feeling is, how to manage it, then we end up developing what we call a competing response for the tic. A competing response is something we do to control the tic. So for example, if I have eye blinking and I'm blinking really hard, then we practice for extended periods of time. We could start with something as small as 10 seconds where we control our blinking. So instead of blinking like this, then we're gonna control blinking just normally, right? And to do that, someone that has tics, and especially eye blinking tics, they need to fight the urge to really blink hard. So we teach them how to do it, and we do it with them. And we develop a reward system around it. That way, we do it, we practice in the clinic, but then everyone is able to take it home and get rewarded for it. And luckily, when kids are able to do that, little by little, we see the tics really start to decrease. So we've been very lucky at our clinic to see positive results. And that's not to say we have 100% results, because that would not be true. And any clinic that really says things like that would be falsely advertising, because we see that even in the best research in the world, the research trials, it's really around 60 to 80%, with some cases reaching 100%. But the general kind of improvements that we end up seeing are 60%, 80%, which is a huge, huge factor. So that's kind of a little bit, I answered your question in a very lengthy way, so I apologize.
No, it's good, it's very clear. So my next question would be, you know, you talked briefly about the tips that you give, you know, the kids that come to your clinic. What about their families? What sort of advice would do you give them usually? Like the support of the family or the network, the surroundings?
Yeah. So that's usually a very, very integral part that we try to, not try, I mean, we definitely do it right away, because we realize how pivotal it is in the treatment process. If you imagine any child that is developing these tics, and you can imagine that it's very scary for the parents, first of all. But second of all, being so worried about their kids, what parents tend to do instinctively is want to hide their kids. So we decided to name today's talk, I Won't Hide. And the reason we wanted to name it that is because this is the normal thing most parents, and really I would do the exact same thing if I wasn't aware of what this is. And I would say 98% of people don't know what Tourette disorder or tics are, or tic disorders are. And so they hide their kids. You know, they look at them and they say, the tics are really bad today, we're not going to go out. The tics are bad today, they're not going to go to school. The tics are bad today, I'm not going to go blank, right? And you start filling in all these blanks, and what happens is the quality of life for the parents and for the children really starts dwindling, dwindling, dwindling. And it's very sad to see. Because from their perspective, and really, I empathize, because I would do the exact same thing. Like if I wasn't aware of what this was. You want to protect your child. You don't want anyone to make fun of them or say, hey, what are you doing? Why are you being so weird? Why are you blinking that way? Why are you making those sounds? And we want to stop that. We want to educate not just the families, but all of the public, that someone that has Tourette syndrome does not mean they have an intellectual disability, does not mean that they have low IQ, does not mean that they have something wrong with them. Tics are just that. They're simply involuntary movements. They mean nothing about that particular boy or girl or young man or young lady. It means nothing other than they have involuntary movements. It means nothing about how smart they are, how well put together they are, how good their family is. And these are assumptions we end up making seeing people in public. You know, we might go to an extreme where people have involuntary curse words, right? What we call coprolalia. Coprolalia is what Tourette disorder became famous for. If anyone was on YouTube and saw all these videos, this is what Tourette disorder really got famous for, when in reality, that's 10% of people that have Tourette disorder. It's a very, very, very small percentage. Now, those people get stigmatized really quickly, that they come from bad families, that people, that they can't control their kids' behaviors. And one of the things we sometimes do is we often offer to families this card that explains what Tourette syndrome or Tourette disorder is, so that if they're in public and someone says, hey, you need to stop that, they say, listen, this is not something he or she can control. You need to back off and respect it and actually be supportive. right? That's the kind of environment we want to have for all of our boys and girls, right? That they're supported in the community, not stigmatized. That they're able to walk outside, live their lives normally, whether it's at home or school. And the role of parents, which is really, really hard, is to be okay with their kids being out there. A family that's supportive will start taking chances on their kids. To understand, yes, they do have Tourette's or they do have tic disorder or whatever it may be, but I'm not going to stop them from going to Ski Dubai. I'm not going to stop them from going to school. I'm not going to stop them from doing a presentation. In fact, we should do the opposite. Say, you're not different than anyone else. Why wouldn't you do a presentation? You're not different from anyone else. Why wouldn't you go to school? Now, the really nice thing is when we're also able to kind of bring that to the school setting as well. And I will be very honest, most if not all of the schools through Dubai and the Emirates at large are very, very supportive of kids that have tic disorder or Tourette disorder. They really want to do their best to support them in the classroom. And one of the things we often do is help the parents to empower the child. So one thing we often offer is to go to schools with the child and do a PowerPoint presentation or some sort of presentation on Tourette. So that way they're empowered and the people around them start understanding what this is. So not only are they going to be bullied less, not only are they going to be able to explain this better, but now that whole environment is educated. And they're able to go and educate others if they were ever to see someone with a tic disorder or a Tourette disorder. And that's really important for a child to feel empowered instead of feel disenfranchised or to feel out of place. Because that's the last thing we want any child to feel, especially when it's something that's really out of their hands. Again, I gave a very lengthy answer, but that's really where we count on parents, that they push their kids out of the nest. We want them to be uncomfortable. We want them to embrace who they are.
But I have a question. So I'm just, you know, picturing myself, if I have a sibling or a kid in the future that, you know, does develop the Tourette disorder. How would I be able to help if, for example, they're at home and, you know, there's a stressful situation going on? How can I help? I understand that, you know, the more stressful the situation is, the stronger or louder the tics are. So how is there anything that I can immediately do in order to help them, you know, calm down or something?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I would say you would start learning about what it is in the environment that triggers it. So one easy trigger that we know is electronics. So screen time is one thing that tends to increase tics. Now, because it increases tics, one of the recommendations is that parents will limit screen time. And they understand that it's not punishment, but it's actually for the sake of the management of the disorder. And just like anything else, so if I know someone has asthma in a particular place is more likely to cause them to have an attack, then I'm going to make sure they're careful around that place. Or if it's a place that they have to go to, then they have their inhaler, right? Well, very much the same way. We want to know what it is that's triggering. We want to know what the environmental factors are that are making this worse. And there usually are. Sometimes it's more in the morning. Sometimes it's more at night. So we look for what we say is an ABC approach to things. So what's the antecedent? What is it that happens before? And then we see the tick itself. And then what happens after? Because sometimes ticks are reinforced by their environment, right? Where someone might be in a stressful situation, the tics start happening, and then all of the parents stop fighting if there is fighting at home. Now, what happened there is it got reinforced by a calm home. Meaning whenever there's fighting, we're going to see tics, and it's going to be reinforced by people paying attention to the tics instead of the fighting. So it might be attention, not that it's happening for attention, but the more attention we give to it, it can reinforce it to happen more. So we look for the context of where a tic is happening. Again, it could be TV, it could be homework time, and we try to reduce or adapt what those things are to make it less stressful. The other thing we try to do, which has an immediate effect and as simple as the sounds, and a lot of people don't believe us, is diaphragmatic breathing or deep breathing. The reason deep breathing works so well is that it has an effect on the nervous system. Now, like we were saying before, tics are from the brain, right? They're neurological. Now, because they're neurodevelopmental or neurological, something as simple as breathing will start to calm the central nervous system down. It'll start giving you control over your body. And it's really cool to see, because you might have a child right in front of you and you tell them start breathing deeply and the tics calm down. And it's something so simple, but you look at them and you see how excited they are that they're finally able to control the tics, even if it's for a brief moment. And it makes them so excited. So relaxation exercises are what we would kind of categorize that as. So breathing exercises are really helpful. Things like meditation, things like progressive muscle relaxation, depending on where the tics may be occurring. All of those things we put under the umbrella of awareness training, right? We want them to relax. We want them to be aware. That way they develop more and more control. So as a mom, and you look at your little boy or girl, that's exactly what you would be doing. You would be encouraging them to take deep breaths and calmly reward them, say, great job. You're taking really nice deep breaths. Look at that. And those are the things that make a really big difference to kids, having that type of encouragement. So kids that are able to do that within an environment where they're encouraged, it makes a really big difference. Now, if you want to take it one step further, I would say then you could also have a competing response. So if you have a shoulder shrug, right, where someone has an involuntary movement in their shoulder maybe, then a competing response for that would be to maybe put their hand under their leg. That way it controls that whole area, and to flex it for 1 minute. So during that 1 minute, they're taking deep breaths. And they could still be talking, they could still be having a good time, but they're controlling that particular area where the muscle is being affected by the tic, right? So any parent out there, you could definitely do things like that, right? And that's what's known as habit reversal therapy. So as simple as it is, with the right practice, with the right support, they significantly reduce tics.
Again, you answered that question very clearly. So, okay, I just have a couple of technical questions. You said in some cases, right? Or is it in all cases that, people who have the disorder have to take medication? I just want to know. So, for example, would you write this medication for a child, like 5 years old?
So I'm not a psychiatrist, but I will tell you what usually happens. Most kids, we don't medicate. No, unless it's really, really, really severe. The number one, and this is really across the board internationally, the guidelines are to start with the behavioral therapy, CBIT, the comprehensive behavior intervention for tics. And once we feel like that's not working, then we usually will start introducing medication. Now, that being the case, we can also introduce medication right away. It's not and or. So we often use both of them together. So it's not one or the other. Some families prefer to start using medication along with behavioral therapy right away, and we go with that. We really offer them all the options and we encourage them to make an informed decision. But we also tell them that both of them, we encourage them when both are necessary. And we also give our recommendations. If we say it seems like this is a very mild tic disorder because there is different severities, then we say really, they might not even need treatment at all. You know, they just need some relaxation exercises, some awareness training, and that's all, and they're good to go. Whereas other kids need an ongoing, you know, about 10 sessions or so is the average, where they learn how to control these tics really well. And we often do it in the context of cognitive behavioral therapy sessions. So to address any sensitivities that they have around this area. And like we said before, a lot of these kids also have things like obsessive compulsive disorder. There's a very high comorbidity. There's a high overlap between kids that have OCD and ADHD and that have tic and Tourette disorders. So that being the case, we're often looking at all of these things together, not one or the other, to make sure that we give a comprehensive treatment. So it depends on the case, but we often will encourage medication either initially if it's severe enough, or we offer it as a option for parents at all times at the discretion of the psychiatrist, of course.
Thank you. Again, guys, whoever is watching us, if you have any questions, please write them down either in the chat box on Zoom or on the comment section in InstaLive. So someone here is thanking you for the great tip. And another person is asking, what is the center called?
The hospital is Jalila Children's Hospital, Al Jalila Children's Hospital. Yeah. And we're all under the Mental Health Center of Excellence in that center. So if anyone would like to make a referral, they could simply go to Jalila's website. And there's a section there for referrals. And we're happy to take your phone calls, your questions. And if we think we could help, we'll definitely be happy to see anyone, of course.
Yeah. You guys can also DM us and we'd be sharing the accounts. You can directly reach out to them. I don't see any more questions. I think you're very, very thorough and clear in your answers, which is very good. We'll give it a couple of minutes until maybe some questions start rolling in. So meanwhile, if you don't mind giving us a summary of the talk. Oh, 1 second. There's a question. Is there a genetic component to the disorder?
Yeah, we definitely believe that there is. Now, this is kind of being investigated more and more. But, you know, like we touched on a little bit earlier, we don't say it's fully genetic because there's a very high or big environmental factor to it. But we also know that there is genetic factor as well. That being the case, it doesn't mean that there's necessarily someone in the family that had Tourette disorder or tics. You know, maybe there was and no one knows, because it could have been as simple as they were 5, 6 years old. And like we were saying, they might have been sniffling, right? Like doing that. And no one knew what was going on at that time. You know, if you think even 30 years ago, there was a very, very poor awareness about what these disorders were. And if I'm being completely honest, until now, there still is. You know, like when we say Tourette disorder, there's still this idea that it's people that curse, people that are putting up their middle fingers, people that are being rude and loud and whistling, and when in reality that is not at all what Tourette disorder is. It's simply someone that has some motor tics and at least one vocal tic. It's that simple. And it could be something very, very, very discreet, meaning it's not even noticeable. And it still might be diagnosable. So to give you some awareness, some background, numbers wise, we know that 20% of people, and kids specifically, at one point or another, develop a tic. 20% is a lot. When you think of any school, that's 1 in 5 kids. Meaning if you have a classroom of 20 kids, then you have at least 4 people in there or 5 people in there that at some point, one point or another, had a tic. Now, most tics don't actually last very long. It only becomes a disorder when it lasts for more than a year. That's when we classify it as a disorder. But it doesn't mean that we can't get treatments before that. Because sometimes the onset is very, very sudden. It's acute. And it causes a lot of stress. So that being the case, we can start treatments as soon as the tics start. We don't have to wait for 1 year when we say, okay, now it's a Tourette disorder. Now we can start to offer treatment. Not at all. Now, out of those 20%, we know that the kids that have it for a year or two are about 2%. Which again is not a small number. It's between 1 to 2%. So if you have a school of, 500, which might be an average amount, then you have a good number of people in there as well, right? You have about 10 kids in that school that have a diagnosable disorder that has to do with vocal tics or motor tics or both together, making it Tourette disorder. Right, and that's a very common thing. So if we think about it that way, Tourette disorder or tic disorders in general are everywhere. We just might not notice them, right? And you might think, well, I have a friend that, blinks really hard. Are those tics? Maybe, possibly, yeah. Does that mean they need to go get treatment? No, not necessarily. But the tics are pervasive. Tics are in a lot of, they're around us, but we often don't realize that they are, right? And the really nice thing about all of that is if we could all put the right support in place, the right mindset in place, we're going to be able to support a lot of kids. Now, I keep saying kids, but tics and Tourette's often also kind of go into adulthood. And let me rephrase that. Not often, but about 10% of people that have tics or Tourette's will, 5 to 10% will continue into adulthood. So it tends to get less and less. Now, like the general onset we said is 5 years old, between the ages of 9 to 12, that's when tics get really bad. Right. If I want to extend it a little bit, I'll say 9 to 13. That's when we see tics get really bad. That's the peak of it. Now, after that peak, it starts to go down around 13, 14, 15. And for most people, around 18, 19, 20, they will disappear completely. For about 10%, 5 to 10% of people, they will remain with them in adulthood. Okay. They tend to still be pretty calm. They tend to be less noticeable, but they are there. So this might start in childhood, but it oftentimes will continue, not often again, for only 5 to 10% will continue into adulthood. Yeah.
Thank you. We do have one more question. Does Al Jadila offer any training for professionals in CBIT?
Not yet. Not yet. We hope to. We hope to in the future. Yeah.
All right.
We are not a mental. We're not a center of excellence for tic and Tourette yet. Because there is a certain certification process that we need to go through to become that, and we're trying to do that. So hopefully in the near future, we will become that. And we will be able to offer training for all of our colleagues, because that's a very, very important next step in all of this. Yeah.
That sounds wonderful. We'll be happy to announce if you guys are, you know, if you guys start this. All right. So we're out of questions. Just, you know, you can give us again a brief summary just to wrap up. And sure. If you guys have questions you'd like to ask separately, feel free to reach out on our DMs and we'll be happy to share the contacts.
Yeah. So to conclude, tics are broken down into two forms. We have vocal tics, which are sounds, and we have motor tics, which are movements. And they can be really simple, that someone can just blink in an exaggerated way, or someone might make a sniffling sound or a throat clearing sound, you know, that could be a tic. But it's a repetitive involuntary movement. And the other word we often use is it's non-rhythmic, meaning there's no rhythm to it. You'll see it happen over and over, but there isn't really a rhythm to it. So they're repetitive, involuntary, and non-rhythmic. We say that they're neurodevelopmental, meaning they happen in the brain and they tend to happen within a specific span of time. They come around the age of 5 years old, will get really, they reach their peak, not with everyone, around 9 to 13. That's the age they're in the middle there. And what we see afterwards is that around 18, 19, 20, they tend to go down completely or disappear for most people. Whereas for 5 to 10% of people, they can continue into adulthood. For most people, this is a very, very manageable disease. There are medical treatments, medication options, I should say, and there are behavioral treatment options like comprehensive behavior intervention for tics, or a CBIT for short. These things are very effective in managing it, and we don't say we cure it, but we manage it really well, that we're able to give kids and families their quality of life back. For all parents, we say, don't hide your kids. Don't have the tic disorder or the Tourette disorder stop your child from doing anything. Teach them what they are, empower them, and really have them live their life to the fullest, whether or not tics are a part of their life. We want everyone to have a full life. And tics should never be the decider of whether or not a child goes out or goes out skiing, goes out with friends. We help them to understand and we help them to explain what tics are to everyone, including their schools. That way they're well supported at home, they're well supported at school, whatever their respective environment may be, if they're in karate classes, ballet classes, boys or girls, that they really feel like they're supported. And I think if we do that, all of us as a community, then we're really helping not only destigmatize tics, but we're giving kids and their families their life back.
This was great. You have very nice messages coming in on Insta Live. They're thanking you for the great tips and the great talk. It was really nice having you on Mental Health AE's Tuesday Talks. Thanks. And we would love to have you again, honestly, if you have any more topics you'd like to raise more awareness about. If you guys have any requests, also please let us know. Reach out on our DMs or our comment section. And we will be posting this as IGTV on Thursday. So you guys can refer to this whenever you want. And we'll definitely be tagging Dr. Fadi and the hospital. Great. Again, very nice messages. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. This was great.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye, everyone. We'll see you again next Tuesday.